I'm driving home from Syracuse. It's Monday, January 15th. It's tax day. And the sun's shining outside. Got a couple hour drive ahead of me. And starting to think about how to put together the story structure from a narrative drama point of view for the opening of Hazel Drew, Who Killed Hazel Drew. And so what I'm going to do is just kind of talk about it loosely as to the thoughts that are going through my mind right now. And what I'm playing with is the idea of two young boys, approximately 8 and 10 years old, in their pajamas. Or maybe they're a little bit older and they're starting to just, there's some sense of rebel or adventurism is probably a better way to describe it, in one of them or each of them. And a grandmother is telling them the story, the ghost story of Hazel Drew. Now this is a real story back in the day, because there was, and we can reference the real story, the ghost story of Hazel Drew, I should say. What it exactly is, I don't know at this point, so what I'm going to do is make it up and share bits and pieces of the ghost story. I don't necessarily want to share it in a real narrative structure, but I do want to, as far as, you know, having to, when I say a narrative structure, I mean the idea of having to open to close, beginning to ending. I don't think that I want to tell that story. What I want to do is share bits, the enticing bits, and let people fill in the rest. So it'll likely go something like, well, I don't know. I'm not going to attempt to actually write the ghost story on the fly right now, but the idea is that they learned that Hazel Drew was, it was twilight. One of the things that I think we can bring out is that something about it getting dark or just before dark, and maybe reference that she was seen and play up the fact that she was swinging her hat as if not a care in the world. There's something poetic about that, and the joy, something about, you know, accentuating the joy she was feeling. But darkness settled on Taberton Road, and with darkness also came danger. And Hazel, or the fact that that there was somebody she's with. So I'm not sure how to get into this, but something about her friend or her companion or meeting someone or hinting to the fact, and that when it became dark, it was he and he changed. It was, or someone killed her. So certainly confused about what that is right now. But the idea of it becoming dark and she was killed, and she's searching for the man or the person who killed her. That's the idea, that the ghost is in search of something, which is why young men, boys, or why it's dangerous to be in the woods at night, or to be outside playing after dark, unless, you know, you're right there near the campfire or with the adults, because Hazel Drew is out there. So something about that, and maybe you might, the idea of a camera move. So as I'm picturing this grandmother telling a story to the boys, what I'm also seeing is one of the boys continues to look off from his grandmother, and as if he sees something behind her in the doorway, or he's looking around. to get a sense of what's going on here, and maybe some camera moves, you know, like one, and this could be a very simple, you know, over the shoulder, you know, maybe just a two shot off from behind grandma to the boys, and a dolly move, a slow dolly move across grandma's back into darkness, revealing a transition to go into the woods or onto the road to now take up with these two drunk travelers at night and hearing this sound. You know, maybe that's cued by grandma saying that if you listen closely, you'll hear the sounds, you'll hear her cry in the woods, and with that, having these drunks stop, because we now hear the cry, and they hear the cry, and they have an exchange, did you hear that? And it quickly becomes that it's Hazel Drew. I think it might be important to show that they are drunk, or maybe not. Maybe, you know, maybe we play this straight up as if, you know, maybe they're not drunk. Maybe I'll change that too. I don't know. We'll see. The story is it was drunks, but I've only heard that once, so I may take some liberty with that and make that young boys, because I think it's more endearing when it's young boys, and it fits the Frost Boys better. It's a better connection to what a grandmother could say or would say in order to bend the story so that it becomes a lesson for the boys. So considering that, that's what I'll do. So I think I left off talking about transitioning to the guys walking on the road, and they might not be drunks, they might be just young men, boys coming home too late, being out past our curfew, and hearing the cries of Hazel in the pond. And you know, it'd be interesting to, I don't know, we'll see what happens with us actually disclosing that there was the sound of a calf. I think that would be good to disclose, because I want there to be credibility to the origin of the Hazel Drew story and to give it mystery, but I don't want to infer that this is a ghost story and that somehow it feels like if I don't disclose that it kind of lends itself to being that I'm making the whole thing up and not just the ghost story part. So at this point, it feels like I should disclose it, and not sure how to do that yet, but that's fine. We'll figure that out. So at this point, we're either going to transition to Twin Peaks connection, and the narrator could introduce, make the transition. I'd rather it be an interview, and you know, one of the natural ways of that comes to my mind of making this transition is to see the names of the boys. So at some point toward the end, disclosing Mark Frost, and then somehow explaining, you know, going into Mark and Scott's career quickly with the narrator doing that. The narrator would probably have to break in at some point and say, maybe Grandma said goodnight, Mark, goodnight, Scott, or whatever, and maybe they settle, or maybe they break the fourth wall, one of them, and or the camera just lifts off, or some sort of cinematic departure, and we learn that maybe it could be as simple as the camera raises up, slows down to a stop, and maybe, you know, takes a look at this from a whole omnipresent God point of view, as if we're going into the future, maybe even freeze frame him. We say, you know, this was the House of Frost. It was 1968, and this, and the boys are Mark and Scott Frost. Mark went on to writing for Hill Street Blues and co-creation of Twin Peaks with David Lynch. Certainly could do that, and the next transition would probably need to be how Hazel drew the connections, the story structure, or the secret life of Hazel Drew is connected to the secret life of Laura Palmer, and the area is also part of that character building. So in essence, one of the things that some people have difficulty with who are from the area is they don't see the connection, and you know, it's because it's not literal. So in that case, I think, you know, art can help explain art, and the opportunity to share information, photos, in such a way about the area going back in time that the connection is made for those who know Twin Peaks. The connection is made with the logging industry, with the characters around town, and hopefully figuring out a way to bring in some of that class separation, the two classes, the coal burners and the folks with money who are coming to town to stay in the hotels, and them intermixing is a tension that can start to set up here early on. Now, a different approach to transition out of the grandma ghost story could be, because we're still with Hazel Drew, so the idea of being able to go right into the pond and Hazel in the pond and the detective, the reenactment of Jarvis and the detectives and the boys being at the pond, pulling Hazel out of the pond. Of course, at this point, we don't know who she is. The viewer knows who she is, but the people involved in the investigation at the time don't. This is where we begin a real time, as if it is January 11th, 1908. From this point on, this reenactment, whenever we see the detectives working through information or doing anything, it's significant in that they are investigating, they are working through information, and we can also tie in the newspapers. So, let's say in this case, we see visuals of detectives, we see Hazel's body in the pond in the distant, maybe over the hip of someone taking notes, maybe a camera flash. That was early days of camera, so maybe no camera. Someone taking notes, I think I said that. And then a newspaper article, either in the middle of this, at the beginning of it, or at the end of this sequence, to then introduce the idea that the newspapers will be a thread, a vehicle for this storytelling. Make sure that up front it becomes an important part of the element of the storytelling. So from there, we could go into learning more about the area of Sand Lake, or maybe right at that point, we actually go into introducing the Twin Peaks connection. So we go, in this case, we would go from the ghost story to the pond reenactment and then to Twin Peaks connection, taking what we've effectively done is, or essentially done, hopefully effectively, is that we've taken what was, we've introduced the story in an interesting way, the ghost story, dramatically with the boys. We furthered the drama and the tension of the story with the two boys coming in. So maybe there's only 6 minutes gone, or maybe less than that, maybe as little as 3 minutes have gone by, and we're in the pond. We're reenacting. It's now 1908. And we see a dead body. So the association is made that this is Hazel. We've just been talking about a girl in a pond and a dead body. And the viewer is now taken into this time. They realize it's real, that we see a newspaper headline, and we learn more about the murder as if we are experiencing it through reading the newspaper in 1908, through reading the newspaper and imagining in 1908. After we learn enough about visually plant some important elements in the scene, like seeing Frank Smith, seeing the hat and the gloves maybe, certainly seeing the reporting and the detectives and Jarvis O'Brien, we then do some sort of a transition move. It would be good to have some cinematic moves worked out in different areas to be able to dump out some wipes, some natural wipes, to transition into a new type of a segment so that it's softer, more seamless. So some of that planning is going to be helpful, even if can nail half of the transitions that have more significance and smoother, then it'll should have a big effect on the blending, the feeling of realness for this documentary. The drama and the realness to really weave together is would be nice. That could make the film really good instead of just giving good information and a fun story. So at this point in time, if we then went to the Twin Peaks connection, it might be a natural segue to see Hazel's body and then the title comes up and it's the murder, you know, that inspired Twin Peaks, you know, we do a pull out or something like that. So that was all precursor to the title sequence, and then we go into how this was the Twin Peaks connection. We then go into, we come out of this title sequence into an interview, or into the narration, and we introduce, like Laura Palmer, or like the Laura Palmer. This may be where David Bushman or the Bushman's type of stuff that he says, that the parallel connections, that Hazel had, you know, a double life, that Laura had a double life, and you know, this happened and that happened, and how there's definitely a parallel. And he also, in that context, introduces Sand Lake and the different class systems in Sand Lake, which would be a natural transition to I just started thinking about something else. Well, let me come back here. A natural transition to Sand Lake as a character in the film, and back on track with version 3 of the outline that I've been working on. So at this point, the only thing that's changed is whether or not we go ghost story, pond pulling Hazel out, reenactment to Twin Peaks, or we go ghost story, Twin Peaks, Pond pulling Hazel out. At this point, I think I'm liking the idea of keeping Twin Peaks happening after we see the pond and her hanging out, or being pulled out. I mean, I do like the idea of seeing the boys, and at that point in time, learning that they're Mark Frost. So, you know, I guess as I get writing the actual dialogue and start to create the shot list for those, then I'll have more time to spend with the scene and playing in my head, and can make some decisions about where I think I want it. And then I'll maybe revisit it and just see if there's something simple I can do to maybe change a little bit of the opening or the closing that would allow it to also be a transition for a different time seamlessly, so that I can make that decision in the edit room. Specific, yet just a tiny bit more work and make it flexible. All right, so I think what I'm going to do is end here, and then I'll start a new recording and just throw out some shots that I'm thinking for this and see how that works out. All right, so talking through some shot lists. Coming back from Syracuse and going over some creative ideas, recording some creative ideas. Start that again in case I want to use it. Coming back from Syracuse, picking up on another recording of creative ideas for Who Killed Hazel Drew opening. This is going to be more about shot lists. So thinking shots for Grandma reading to the boys. It would be certainly a over-the-shoulder Grandma Dolly move, where maybe it's at an angle or something, but it comes, sees the boys, we see the back of Grandma, and then we wipe into darkness off of the back of Grandma, being able to introduce the people walking home, boys walking home. Out of darkness, since it's going to be black there. So that's it's called a medium two shot, medium to wide two shot, actually probably wide, 35 millimeter, something like that. Maybe a 28, where we're right there with them, and we do that move off of the wide. The other way of approaching it is we could consider shooting from farther away, from a longer lens, and experiencing this as if from somebody else. Though I think it feels better to be involved with them intimately. So I do think the master shot certainly will be a 35, and maybe we use that far off telephoto shot for later in there when it's time to pull emotionally or time-wise to pull away from them and come back with the lens. So 35 wide dolly move, call it two shot to over the shoulder to black, white, the boys and Grandma. The other shots would be two shot of the boys and singles of the boys. The two shots and the singles, I like the idea of being able to have one of the boys looking off as if there's something going on somewhere else, maybe some interaction of the, you know, playing again with eyes. I like being able to, let's not say anything, let's indicate some things are happening. Subtext, other stories are happening, unfoldings through the eyes. So we'll use single shots to capture some of those. Maybe a two shot from the side, connecting the boys, and then we need a single back at Grandma Now, I could pull this whole thing off, and might, with just that dolly shot. That's the shot that feels like the whole beginning part of this story could be told from. That and a single back at Grandma. But I'll probably shoot those others for safety reasons. More story structure, more story editing possibilities is what I mean. The other thought I have for that room is, as we end it, maybe we go, the edit takes us to the guys walking and then back into the bedroom. And maybe as we end the last shot or sequence of the bedroom, sequence of shots are from farther away, or it's a jib moving, or even the dolly move, moving us far away from the boys, the grandma telling the story. And I'm not sure in sequence, I had that idea earlier, but I'm not sure in sequence where that would, no, I guess it could. I mean, I guess we could go to the ghost story and then come back to the boys in the edit I'm talking about. So it's possible that in the edit, we go from grandma telling the story to the guys walking on the road, back to the bedroom, back to the guys walking on the road, and then maybe one more time, ending in the bedroom, where it kind of has the feel of, and that's the tale of Hazel Drew ghost story, or the moral of the story, that's why you can't go out at night kind of thing. And then having the camera cinematically make some sort of transition to another place. And so that could be the jib move or some sort of dolly move. So those should be the shots for the bedroom. At this point, I'm thinking that I would probably build some fake walls, glue on, paint them up, and maybe just have fake walls and do this in our kitchen, which has a high vault ceiling, so I could actually do a jib move if I wanted to off of that. So in that case, you know, the shots would be kept pretty simple, fairly close, and then maybe if I did some pull-away shot, it would fall off into darkness, so that you wouldn't see the edges of there being nothing. It would just be darkness. So, now let's move on to the guys walking down the road. So this is, I see feet, something close shot of one set of feet or two set of feet. It certainly would be nice if it was a full moon and did some scouting and found a place where we can take advantage of that moon being in there. That would mean going up a couple times ahead of time and really seeing the moon, certainly at least a month ahead of time, and then the next time be ready to come up. Anyway, whatever. I'll think about that later. Let's stick with shots for now. So, feet coming to a stop. Feet shuffling a little bit. There's something about keeping the suspense when we don't see faces yet. Maybe some sort of, from the feet, a slow camera move, dolly move from behind, so we still don't see them, but we see them framed nicely with something, woods or a road or something interesting, mysterious in front of them, and the dolly moves in from behind and comes up on their shoulder. with the feeling that it is something that they're scared of, or something that will get them, is probably the feeling, is something that's moving and it's going to get them. And then cut to the front of them, or cut to a shot of the woods and a noise, and then back to the front of them. So in that case, probably looking at a two shot back at them. I like the idea of maybe before I'm going to the two shot, we've created this tension and mystery. Let's go with some extreme close-ups. So we still don't know, you know, we don't see their faces per se, but we see their eyes, we see their emotion, we see their fear. And that might give us an opportunity to cut back to the eyes of the boys and connect the story that way. It would be, could be a nice connection. Maybe when we come back to the ghost story of the boys, there is a little bit of separation, you know, pulling out from them the intensity, separating from the intensity, and the shots get a little wider, and we have the opportunity to then have them say, no, I don't really want them to talk. So maybe they would, but so if they did, they would just say something simple like, Hazel Drew, is that her? I like, is that her best? And then the other guy may be saying, as if it's a question, Hazel? And again, weaving it back to the boys, the grandmother telling the story. And so that would be a two shot. I guess moving on from here, I have to know what the script is in some more detail, so I'll probably leave it at that for now. I mean, the idea of moving, the idea of using some techniques, some horror film techniques here, will probably serve us well. So I suspect at this point something, when we started with some sort of moving shot from behind, and maybe we bring, you know, we bring a camera in at them again, or we see from, you know, it might be as if a little movement off of a tree, and then we see them from a distance. Why not use some of the tried and true techniques of as if somebody's watching kind of thing. So at this point, I guess I'm going to consider at least one shot, maybe three shots from outside of the subjective area of the boys and into the area that the danger could lurk, and see the boys from danger's point of view. That could work nicely, so I'm going to call those shots for now. Let's see. So, what this feels like, as far as time goes, certainly the boys and grandmother, I can do that in the winter with a smaller crew and three actors. So I'd say the shoot is a day shoot, and it's probably going to take, to dress that room and to get things ready, I'm going to say 3 days. It's called 3 8-hour days, so 24 hours, that's probably not enough, especially with some construction going on. So let's call it 4 days. So, and just to kind of make sure that I've allocated enough time, it's easier to think of it as a concept of a week. You know, it might not be all in 1 week, but it's going to take a week's worth of work to get that shoot ready, that reenactment shoot between writing and dressing the set, saving some money and, you know, doing it myself. Or, actually, this might be a good opportunity to to try to bring somebody else in. Because there's so much time, it should be an easy thing to get somebody else who maybe has some carpentry and design skills. See if I can get some of those theater guys involved to help me dress the set. I would imagine that would be possible. Anyway, I don't need to go into any more detail on that, so I'm going to end this recording in a minute, and I'll be called done for recording for this trip out. But we'll see.